And we're going to read chapter 10 today, Agam Dis. Amna came to Earth from Venus in a physical body in 1955 at what appeared to be a little girl at the age of 7. Our ship landed in a deep valley among the towering peaks of Kashmir. Through the porthole, I could see in a distant valley the tops of buildings of an Indian city. It was early morning and the sun was shining brightly, illuminating the steep faces of the mountains. From this first view, I decided that Earth certainly looked like a beautiful place. As we walked from the convoy, I looked back to see that it was sitting neatly in a clearing within a wooded plateau. For what seemed like hours, we climbed up the steep slopes ahead of us. Walking had been difficult enough, but this was almost unbearable. The feeling of being inside a suit of armor persisted, and my legs were painfully heavy. I had not yet glimpsed my new body in a mirror, but I felt so clumsy that I was certain I looked grotesque. The hillsides around us looked very strange. Blotches of snow covered most of the grass, and yet it was not the least bit cold. My uncle explained, in answer to my question about it, that the air was very thin so high in the mountains, therefore it could snow without being so cold. Ahead of us we saw a wooded plateau upon which stood a giant fortress of wood and stone. This was the physical counterpart of the spiritual city, Agam Dis. Stairs of stone led up the hillside to a wooden gate and fence that surrounded the fortress. Inside we came upon gardens of flowers and vegetables and an assortment of farm animals. My uncle and I and the companion pilot walked up a neat stone path and approached the huge wooden door with iron rings. Just then the door silently opened inward and a hooded figure in a monk's robe stood before us. He was a stately man with a long flowing beard and blue eyes. He greeted us. "Your rooms are waiting." He led us to our sleeping quarters, which I, within my fatigued body, welcomed very much. Agam Dis is the greatest spiritual city on the planet Earth, headed by the master Subal Sakabi. From all outer appearances, Agam Dis is much like any Tibetan monastery, yet here live some of Earth's greatest spiritual giants. Yobol Sakabi is among those adepts who have chosen to immortalize their bodies and whose age is beyond human belief.
And that's Yobol Sakabi.
Yobol Sakabi, thank you. He is reputed to be several thousand years old within the same physical body. For centuries, space travelers have arrived at Agam Dis to adjust themselves to Earth's coarser vibrations. Agam Dis also has one of Earth's temples of golden wisdom, the other one being the Katsapari Monastery in Tibet. These temples hold the ancient teachings we call laws of the supreme deity, as respected on Venus since long ago. Physically, Agam Dis is one giant square building with stone floors and dark wooden walls. Candles provide the lighting. They are set in candle holders at intervals along the walls. In the middle of the building is a large dining hall with a fireplace. Adjoining it is a large cathedral-like meeting room for spiritual chanting. Just inside the gates is a courtyard with animals, gardens, and herbs, vegetables, and flowers. Along the perimeter of the building are the individual sleeping rooms, about 50 in number, very simply furnished. Each had a single bed with a nightstand that holds books and a few personal belongings. There is also a picture of a spiritual master in each room. No one at the temple enters another's room unless invited. Everyone at Agam Des rises with the sun. I learned on the first day. I had been told the night before that a bell would ring to summon me to breakfast. A rooster was crowing in the yard as I heard the bell ringing in my sleep. I noticed that the robe I was to wear, with its rope belt and hood, was woven of a coarse material like a potato sack. I also noted it was too big for me. Looking out the window, I saw a sea of mountaintops below us stretching to the horizon, and the rising sun in an orange-pink morning sky. A warm breeze caressed my face. The window was nothing but a square opening in the stone with wooden shutters to each side. The dining hall was already filling as I entered and took a seat at one of the long tables. Each table could seat about 25. At the head of the middle table sat a master, and at the head of the other tables sat the higher initiates. Our breakfast was a piece of fruit, bowl of rice, and herb tea. That was all. The meals at Agam Des turned out to be very simple events. Twice each day in the mornings we had brown rice and a root plant from the mountains together with herb tea. Every other day, a piece of fruit and yogurt was served. In the evenings, we ate a salad of fresh greens without spices or dressing. Meat or fish was served every other day. Alternately, we had a combination plate of vegetables and a starch. Throughout each day, we drank herb tea and fruit juices, and sometimes I was treated to goat's milk. The food was very bland but good. Gradually during my stay at Agam Des, spices and other additives from the village were added to my diet. This was so I could adjust little by little every day to the American food I would soon be eating. As it turned out, during my first years in Tennessee and Arkansas, my system reacted violently to particularly everything I ate. Food in America is so depleted, processed, and poisoned that we can rightly call it a tragedy. During breakfast that first morning, I noticed that my uncle and his friend were not there. I assumed they were off somewhere together, perhaps arranging to have the ship taken back to the mothership. After we had finished eating, I was given the chore of working in the garden, gathering vegetables for the evening meal. Every visitor and monk at Agam Des pays for his stay with a daily chore. This is how the place is maintained. On some of the days, I fed the animals or milked the goats. I did not speak with the monks very much because they had rules about talking unnecessarily. In the mid-morning, I sat with the monks and listened as they had their music hour, when they practiced their various instruments. The ones who did not have instruments chanted in a song-like way. Chanting took place every day in the chanting hall, where the men gathered to sit on benches or on the floor. I loved the chanting. It was so beautiful and musical that I felt as if I could just be carried away on it. The monks chanted every morning and evening, each time with a different mantra, for the purpose of having an experience on the higher planes. I soon learned that life at Agam Des was very balanced and orderly. As a matter of fact, the men had strict habits. Everything was done at exactly the same time from day to day. After noon, everybody had a free hour to run personal errands, visit the villages, take a nap, or do whatever the individual desired. During my free hour this first day, I did not wish to take a nap, even though I was very tired. I wanted to look around. I walked outside through the gardens for a while and then sat down by a little stream. I was deep in thought when the bell rang, signaling the lesson time was beginning. Let's see, for the cello students who lived at Agam Dis, this was a time for lessons in the laws of the Supreme Deity. For visitors like myself, it was time to meet with a tutor. My teacher, this first day, covered quite a few subjects. We talked for a while on how mathematics in the Western world worked and how the American school system was set up. He explained what kindergarten was and the fact that each student was expected to go to school from the age of 5 or 6. He also explained to me what report cards were. He commented that it was not a very good system, but that nothing better was available. It would not be like what I was accustomed to. He taught me to spell a few words and to write the ABCs and read a few passages. All this was rather easy. He explained what I had been told so often before. I would not find my personal teachings anywhere, and I would not find anyone who would understand them until later in my life. People's attitudes toward other races were not what I was accustomed to. The darker races were considered inferior. I had a hard time accepting this, remembering the loyal race of Jupiter posed that I would live with it and try to understand why this happened. The monks at Agam Dis did not make known their names because at the time the spiritual teaching was very secret. This was for their protection because people in the villages harbored negative attitudes toward any teaching that was not an accepted Indian or Tibetan path. I would face these kinds of prejudice a lot more as I grew up. In the following weeks, I learned many new things about Earth. Sometimes the tutor and I would sit in a room with our books, or we would go out into the forest to learn about the different plants, trees, and flowers. In the herb garden, I was shown various herbs and their uses and why certain kinds were taken in teas at certain times of the day. I spent many days practicing, walking, sitting, climbing stairs, and doing all sorts of physical exercises. I had only little time in which to lose all of my self-consciousness and the haunting feeling of being in a suit of armor. Every day I had a lesson in balance where I practiced standing on one foot, hopping on one foot, walking and running. In our walks outside, I would jump over puddles or climb trees while one of the monks watched my progress. During my stay at Agam Dis, I worked with several of the teachers, one for each student. It was always someone who was interested in the field and had studied it in depth. I was taught the history of the United States as well as the present situation. The Cold War was explained to me, how the people were afraid of being bombed by an enemy. When I told my first teacher how clumsy I felt, he arranged to borrow a mirror for me from one of the villages in the valley. No one at Agam Dis possessed a mirror. I was very excited about this because I had not yet seen my new body, and it helped my attitude to see that I was not as coarse and bulky as I felt. The monks told me that by Earth standards, I was actually very delicate and beautiful. I must admit, I looked all right and felt less clumsy afterward. After lesson time on my first full day at Agam Dis, we enjoyed a treat of herb tea and a dark bread with goat cheese. Afterwards, we made our way to the forest for a outdoor chant, and by the time we arrived, our food had been well digested. We sat down. The chant was explained, and I was told what plane it was from. Then we chanted. I can only say that my experience was exhilarating, enlightening, and indescribable. To bring us back to earth, the initiates spent the next full hour with us in a question-answer period. Next on the monks' schedule was recreation time, a time of exercise classes and sports that I was not allowed to join. My uncle and his companion suggested that we go for a walk toward one of the villages. Odin told me all about the street markets and these villages, which I found very interesting. Here were sold all sorts of handicrafts, rugs, jewelry, pottery, clothes, and more. I was rather excited about going into the village and seeing all these things, but my uncle explained that this would not be possible. Our light skin and hair may attract too much attention because the natives were very dark people. A number of the villages were communist-controlled or had authorities that would want to see papers and credentials. Along the way, my uncle pointed out various interesting buds, plants, and animals. I was especially fascinated by the pheasants and wild peacocks. We arrived back at Agam Dee's shortly before dinner, and I went to my room to rest from our walk. There I looked at the plants from Venus and the jewelry from my mother, all the time wondering about my new life in the United States. The ringing of the dinner bell broke the silence. During my stay at Agam Dee's, I saw Yabal Sakabi about three times, once during chanting time and twice for dinner. Once every week, the master gathered with his children, and as he called them. Most of the time, he was on journeys throughout the mountains, into the villages, or in contemplation by himself to work in the soul body on missions here, on earth, or somewhere on higher planes. Yabal Sakabi looks very much like an Indian, with huge dark eyes and a dark olive complexion, and a beard. His hair is silvery gray. He is a very quiet man and always carries a smile. Rarely does he speak about spiritual matters unless he is giving a talk. The other masters that I know of, Rabazar Taurus and Fubi Quants, have also retained their physical bodies for spiritual missions on earth. Rabazar Taurus was directly responsible for training Pedar Zask, also known as Paul Twitchell, for missions in modern society. He taught the laws of the Supreme Deity. He will work more openly in the spiritual awakening of Earth within the next few decades. At dinner, Yabal Sakabi blessed the food and told the purpose it was serving. He also welcomed Uncle Odin and me and our companion, telling us that we were very welcome at Agam Dee's. Speaking for all the monks, he said, they were honored to have us visiting Agam Dee's. The master did not say much more. All the monks did not know we were from Venus. Only my teachers and Yabal Sakabi knew this.
Another difficult name.
Yes, well, they're different. I like to be close to the master because of the way I felt when he was around. His presence made me feel good. That is the kind of person he was. And always when he was at the table, he broke bread into a dish and passed it around the table as an honor paid to his students. All of the men at Agam Dee's wore robes and hoods, which they never let down in the presence of anyone else. They were not beautiful by physical standards, as society knows, but beautiful in the feeling I got from them and in the evenness of their features. The monks and adepts at Agam Dis struck me as being pure of countenance, very pure beings. I was honored to be in their presence. Agam Dis is the home of an ancient line of masters, all of which are adept at soul travel and have great responsibilities in the spiritual evolution of Earth. Students of this ancient service live here as well. All of the inhabitants were men, mostly Indian men, and a few Westerners. Some of them were very young, only 12 years old, but the ages ranged up to several thousand years. It was impossible for me to tell their ages from their physical appearance. Most of them did have an ancient quality about them. They were all very quiet and did not talk unless it was absolutely necessary. All of them had even gentle voices and followed the same custom of other planets had, not interrupting another while he spoke. No one would begin to speak until the other had finished. The newest chalice of the spiritual teachings paid by 2 years of service at the temple. These were the people who filled the water dishes for washing in each room and helped with the maintenance. In this way, the monks always had help at the temple, and they always had new chalice. After dinner on that first day, everyone helped with the cleaning up. Some washed the dishes, some swept the floor, and others cleaned the tables. Then everyone retired to his room to attend to personal business, read, or sleep. The first earth book that I read, which one of the monks had loaned to me, was Heidi. I enjoyed it very much. Saturdays were spent gathering food for the next 2 days and storing it in a spring house. This was a small wooden structure which stood directly over and in a cool mountain stream. Bathing was done in a small bathhouse in the woods. Here was a large wooden tub with a cast iron bottom that could be heated by a fire underneath. We also had the choice of bathing in a cold waterfall at the stream. On Sunday, there was not much work for us to do except prepare the meals. The rest of the day was free. I slept very late into the day and then went to play with the chickens and the baby chicks. I sat and listened to the monks singing and playing their instruments, and I loved to join them in the singing. One of the songs they taught me sounded like this when translated into English. I'm a happy soul today, I'll be happy all the way. Even if the sun doesn't shine, I will shine all the time. I'm a happy soul today, I'll be happy all the way. Won't you be happy with me too? I'm a happy, happy soul. The monks at Agam Dis always kept busy with their favorite hobbies. They loved to sing and play musical instruments, and quite a few of the men painted, but I do not believe they ever sold their work. Some of the monks had small gardens or helped in keeping the flower gardens beautiful. The weather was always pleasant. I enjoyed going out and looking over the mountains down into the valleys. The air was always clean and crisp, and the sun was always shining here at the top of the world. Here I would stand and close my eyes, breathe deeply. I learned a great deal from this trip at Agam Dis. I learned to live more comfortably in the physical body and to do everything with grace. As the days went on, I felt less and less awkward and heavy. I learned much about gravity, and I had to be very careful and adjust to physical laws safely. I surely had to watch my feet and see that they were always firmly grounded, and I had to be very careful with objects to be sure that when I sat them down, They were sitting properly. On the astral plane, I could afford to be much more careless. I suppose that throughout my life on Earth, the reason I am always getting bumped and bruised is that I had never quite become used to the physical laws. When you bump against something here, it is going to be painful. You cannot think something out of the way. It is probably a good thing that most people do not remember past lives in the higher planes, because the limitations of the physical world would seem quite unbearable. After my first days at Agam Dees, my uncle suggested that I try to dance. This seemed to be a good idea, but I wondered how it would work out, considering the trouble I had in walking. At first, I practiced my movements in slow motion, and day by day they improved. I enjoyed myself very much. The monks lent my uncle and our friend a flute and a peculiar ancient-looking stringed instrument so that I could dance to music. Dancing with a physical body was a strange experience. The freedom of my astral body was gone. Dancing is much more limited here in the physical plane, for when you go up, you must come down. Instead of dancing gracefully with the power of thought and more or less floating, here you must physically keep a balance and control each muscle. And instead of creating music instantly with the power of thought, here someone must physically play an instrument. Nevertheless, it was an exhilarating experience, one I continued to enjoy. My uncle spent time with me, sometimes to read me a story or relate funny incidents about when I was a child. I could sense that he was sad about my leaving, but he was a master in not letting it surface. He answered my questions about things that I must have missed under Vonnegut. I was told to watch my thoughts here on Earth because although they do not manifest instantly, thoughts and attitudes do make the world what it is. Children, I learned, played a lot of imaginary games, but they could not manifest what they were imagining as we did in the astral plane. Earth children played house and dressed up just as we did, but less elaborately. After the monks found out that I was learning to dance, they requested that my chore be a dance for them after mealtime. They rarely had any kind of entertainment, and since my dancing was oriented towards spirituality, they enjoyed it very much. This was a chore I loved. Being from a higher plane, I was well aware of the high spiritual vibrations at Agam Dees. For years after leaving this spiritual city, I wondered whether it really existed on Earth. It seemed more like a place that could be found on one of the spiritual advanced planets. Of course, the whole idea is to provide a real crossover point for visitors from other planets to the other planes. Anyone on Earth who studied what we on Venus call laws of the Supreme Deity receives most of this truth and wisdom through inner channels. He is taken in the soul body to one of those temples, be they on Earth, Venus, or higher planes, to learn from the way of the Eternal, the most ancient and complete scriptures on this planet. Normally, a student progresses from one temple to the next, beginning for Earth students with the Katsapari Monastery in Tibet. The first book of the Way of the Eternal is kept there, and the students learn under the master, Fabi Quantz. The second book of the Way of the Eternal is kept at Agam Dees, which I personally saw in my stay there. It appears in a huge book enclosed in a glass case, very simple in appearance, but holding some of the deepest secrets known to spiritual man. Much has been written about the nine unknown and secret masters who are in charge of the wisdom contained in these books. A third book is kept in the house of Moksha in Retz, and the next in the Temple of the Golden Wisdom in Shahara del Kanwal on our astral plane, under the care of Master Gopal Das. This man took the soul travel teachings underground in ancient Egypt several thousand years before Christ, when he yet lived on earth. Additional chapters of the Way of the Eternal are kept on successive higher planes for more advanced students of the laws. Our last day at Agam Das was very special. We began the day with a delicious breakfast of tea and honey cake with sour cream. Our rice dish was mixed with herbs and chicken, a rare treat for everyone at the temple. During the afternoon, a special program was held in the chanting room, a session of spiritual poetry, music, songs, and chants. In a way, it seemed like a spiritual seminar, because at the very end, the Master Yabal Sakabi gave a short talk. Since the message was for his students, I am not allowed to repeat here what he said. That evening for dinner, we were surprised by a feast of lamb and brown rice and a cooked vegetable. A huge salad and herb tea completed the meal. Once again, Yabal Sakabi broke the bread and passed it around. It was a royal end to a royal stay at Agam Des. And the last paragraph. We went to our rooms to gather our things, and all the monks walked to the gate with us to say goodbye. We waved and walked down the stairs through the wooded plateau one last time. My walk down the steep slope was much more graceful and comfortable than before, and it seemed to be only a short while before we reached the familiar level clearing where we had landed. After a short wait, our ship appeared in the early evening sky. And that's how the chapter ends.